Yo, what's going on, family? Welcome to a brand new episode of Tariq Radio. I am your gracious host. My name is Tariq Nasheed. Glad to have y'all tuning in, ready to chop up some great game as we do on every week. I am back from Miami. I was in Miami this week, but I am back and I'm here, and we're going to have some real good conversation popping. I don't think I'm going to take calls today. I really just want to chop it up with the family. But let everybody know on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that good stuff that we're live right now, ladies and gentlemen. What we're going to do, we're going to take a real quick commercial break. And we will be right back after these messages, ladies and gentlemen. So don't you move a muscle. Here we go.
Learn the truth about the game by joining dating and life coach Mr. Locario and Miles Cunningham live in New York City on Saturday, April 14th at the NYC Seminar and Conference Center for the Truth About the Game seminar. In this seminar, Mr. Locario will teach you exactly what you need to know to be successful with women. Space is extremely limited, so purchase your tickets today at MrLocario.com. That's MRLOCARIO.com. MrLocario.com.
Yo, what's up, family? Go out right now and get the brand new single from Poetry entitled Get Right. Now, Get Right is available right now on iTunes, Spotify, Tidal, and all digital platforms. Follow Poetry at Poetry the God on Instagram right now. All songs are mixed and mastered by my people over at LegendaryMix.com. So be sure to get the single Get Right right now, available right now. What up, everybody? It's your boy, Crispin, everybody. And I got a brand new video game app out right now, everybody. It's called Crispy's Biscuits, everybody. And you can get the Crispy's Biscuits app right now on the iPhone Apple Store, everybody. And you can also get it on the Google Play Store, everybody. As a matter of fact, everybody, it was the number one game on Google Play all last week, everybody. The game is so exciting, everybody. There's 10 levels you can help me get through, everybody. Where I'm dodging bottles of lotion, everybody. I'm dodging hair clippers, everybody. And I'm dodging taco meat, everybody. So get the Crispy's Biscuits game right now, everybody, at crispysbiscuits.com, everybody. Now I'm about to do my coon laugh, everybody.
The most intense new video game app has now arrived. A medieval kingdom has been plagued with chaos and disorder. An evil force has dominated the land. And now it is up to the bravest knights to fight back the demonic forces and bring justice to the kingdom of the Moors. Play the newest, most exciting battle fight game app ever, Moorish Kingdom. Available at moorishkingdom.com.
You're now tuning into the king of game, Tariq Elite, on Tariq Elite Radio.
Yo, what's going on, family? We are back. We are back right here on Tariq Radio. Ready to do our thing. Shout out to everybody. I played our single, my group Mink Time, Mink Slide. We played our single It's Time right now on Google Play. It's Time is at number 3 on the top of the R&B charts. We are all, man, that number one spot is evading us, man. It's Bruno Mars. He's in the number one spot. It's Bruno Mars. That's a brother named Khalid, not Khalid Muhammad. He's number 2, and we are number 3 on Google Play right now. We got to get that number one spot, family. We need that number one spot. But I thank everybody for getting the single. The single is doing great for a record that's not getting any mainstream radio play. We got some radio play down in Atlanta, not in Atlanta, but when I was in Miami. Shout out to the Mix Show DJ. Shout out to all the brothers and sisters in Miami who was bumping the song. Shout out to the people in the UK. I know they're bumping it a lot over in the UK. Shout out to the family. But thank you guys for supporting the single and continue to support it. But I'm gonna talk more about that later. I'm going to do another broadcast later tonight because there's so much stuff that we have to get into, a lot of things that we have to touch on. A lot of stuff has been going on. And don't forget, right now,
we have the Indiegogo campaign for the Ism Radio Travel reality show, where we travel around the country to showcase black businesses. Today is the last day to get involved. All right, so we're almost at the goal. I haven't been promoting it a lot because I've been so busy with the Mink Slide project, but today is the last day for the Indiegogo project, and everybody here, we can go ahead and reach the goal today. It's only like a $10,000 goal. That's something that I wanted everybody to get involved with, so we can learn how to aggregate projects together as a group. So if everybody listening now, just go to the Indiegogo page and just put $2 on it. We'll get that. We got the link right here in the chat room or on the YouTube channel. If you're watching the YouTube channel live, you guys can click the link, the Indiegogo link, or go to Indiegogo and just type in Ism Radio Reality Show. All right? Just do that and we'll be good to go. But I got to talk about something that's really deep, something that's really heavy. I got to talk about something that I was talking about it on social media all yesterday when I was flying back in from Miami. I was on the plane, and you know, you're on the plane, you can't do anything but tweet and get on Instagram. So I was tweeting a lot about this story yesterday, and I really been trying to get it to break with mainstream media. They don't seem like they, you know, mainstream media just got on it today, as a matter of fact. I saw some stuff with some of the mainstream media outlets, but we were breaking the story yesterday. We were on it heavy. We had all the details, many of the facts. We were breaking it heavy yesterday. But do y'all remember back in 2014, there was a photograph that went viral? It was a photograph of a 12-year-old black child. His name was Devontae Hart. And at the time, there were a lot of protests around the country over the Mike Brown situation, where the race soldier murdered Mike Brown, got off. And, you know, that has been normalized now. But in Portland, a lot of people were angry, as they were all over the country. People were complaining about police brutality and systematic white supremacy. And there was this black child who had a sign that said "Free Hugs." And there's a picture of him crying and hugging a white police officer. And the media jumped on this and paraded it around the world. The picture became viral. And that picture was meant to send a message, like the answer to systematic white supremacy is black people being submissive, black people being forgiving, black people just showing us love, and maybe you can find the humanity in us, and all white cops aren't bad. That was the message that they were trying to use with this photograph. Now, when black folks saw this picture, we knew instinctively something was wrong. We knew something was wrong. Something wasn't right with that picture. We knew. Instinctively, we knew. When I saw this kid walking around with the free hug signs, I knew this kid was adopted by white people. I knew that. Even before I had proof, I knew this kid, some white adopted family, got this boy out here with a sign. And I wasn't so quick to put the little boy on the coon train because he's a child. He's doing what somebody's making him do. And an article, this is an article from 2014 about the picture going viral. This is MSNBC. In the wake of a grand jury decision not to indict Officer Darren Wilson in the shooting death of Michael Brown, Americans have grown accustomed to images of police and protesters in Ferguson. One such image is now going viral, but not for the reason one might think. The photo taken by freelance photographer Johnny Nguyen shows 12-year-old Devontae Hart and the Portland police officer, Sergeant Brett Barnum, embraced in a hug outside of a Ferguson rally on Tuesday. Hart's mother shared the backstory on the photograph in a post on social media. She explained that she and Hart went downtown Portland with the intention of spreading love, kindness, and to remind all people that they matter in this world. Look at the clues there. So these white adopted parents of this kid, they were already on some All Lives Matter. They were on some All Lives Matter shit. You see that? So this kid was adopted by two white lesbian females. Those were his parents. And there were a lot of clues here. There's another story about that same picture being photographed where the police officer said that he gave his version of it because they keep trying to spin the story into a positive black forgiveness tale. They've been trying to spin this story left and right. But the officer said in the middle of the block, hundreds of protesters listened to speeches about the relationship between police and black residents. The boy was trembling with tears running down his eyes. Barnum, the police officer, noticed Hart looking upset at the rally, and he motioned for Hart to come over to his motorcycle. The officer asked his name, shook his hand, asked where he went to school, and the officer saw the sign and said, "Hey, can I get a hug too?" So why was the boy trembling? Why was the boy was already crying before the photograph. The boy was already crying before he took the photograph. Understand that. They make it seem like white daddy gave this boy an embrace and he was so moved by the humanity of white daddy, the boy burst out in tears. That's not what happened. This boy was already crying. He was already trembling before he hugged the officer. That's why the officer went over to him, because the officers said, "What's wrong with this fucking kid?" Then the mother came up with this whole backstory like, "Well, oh yeah, he's just so emotional over the way black people are treated." And the boy couldn't really say nothing. The boy is using his eyes for help, like, "Help, I'm in trouble, help me." This kid was crying for help. This poor child was crying for help. I want y'all to notice the way this kid is dressed. He had on these real big bulky clothes to hide the fact that he was very, very skinny and thin. He was unusually thin. But they were forcing this kid to walk around with these free hug signs. And this boy was looking to people to help him. That's why he was crying. Because these women who adopted him, these white women, they were abusing this boy. A story came out this week. Up there, I think they lived in Oregon. But child services had been called to the house of these white women lesbians, white supremacist female lesbians. Child protective custody services, they've been called to their house a couple of times because these women had a bunch of adopted black kids. They had a bunch of kids. They had about four or five black children that they adopted. Always look at that as a red flag. See, black folks got this thing that white mommy and white daddy, they're adopting you because of the kindness in their hearts. Let me tell y'all something. A lot of these white supremacists and suspected white supremacists, they adopt black kids all the time. Because they know you can get away with abusing black children and authorities will turn a blind eye. So Child Protective Services had been called on these women before. The mother, Sarah Hart, she'd been charged with child abuse already. because the 6-year-old black girl went to school. She had bruises on her stomach and on her back. They asked this child, what the hell happened to you? She's like, my mama beat me. So the mother, the white lady, was charged. The little girl said the woman would bend her over a tub and beat her and do all types of crazy shit. The white lesbian mother got a slap on the wrist. They, you know, the same old 90-day suspended sentence, probation for a year, no jail time. Just another slap on the wrist. So they're beating these kids, getting slaps on the wrist, and it goes further. One of the little girls went to one of the neighbor's houses at 1:30 in the morning, ringing the doorbell, talking about, I need you to protect me. These kids were being terrorized by these white supremacist lesbian females. These kids were being terrorized. The boy, Devontae, who's in the photograph, he too went to some of the neighbor's homes telling them, and this was recently, he went to the neighbor's house and said, hey, look, they're not feeding me over here. They're starving me. They're withholding food as a form of punishment. Can you guys give me something to eat? Also, can you leave food by the mailbox so I can go sneak and get it? They had a torture chamber in there for these fucking kids. That's when the neighbors decided, hey, we might need to call somebody. So they called child services. After they called child services came by the house. The women got the kids and they fled. They hurry up. They got out the house because they knew the jig was up. These women got in the car and drove off of a cliff. This happened this week. They got in the car, drove off a cliff, killed themselves and the children. They can't find Devontae's remains. They cannot find his remains. They found some of the other kids' remains over the cliff. But some of the other kids are missing. They don't know where they are. Were those kids killed before or after these women ran over the cliff? That was a murder-suicide. And do you know the authorities there are still trying to cape for these women? They're still trying to cover shit up. Yeah, they did a Thelma and Louise, basically, and took the black kids with them. Some people are saying, I hope he ran away too, but it doesn't look like it. Those women, those demonic white supremacist pieces of garbage, most likely killed those children beforehand. I don't know. I hope they got away, but it doesn't look like it. And authorities are still trying to cape for these women. They're talking about, well, it don't look like they deliberately drove over the cliff. But then when they did a report of the quote unquote accident, they said there were no brake marks or no skid marks. And they found that strange. No, it's not strange. That means that they weren't trying to stop. That means they deliberately went over the cliff. Instinctively, if your car is about to veer off the road, you will instinctively hit the brakes. That's your instinct if you're not trying to run off the road. Even if you're not trying, even if you're not thinking, instinctively, you will hit the brakes. They didn't even hit the brakes, meaning that they deliberately drove over the fucking cliff. And they're still trying to cape for these women. That was a murder-suicide. Nothing more, nothing less. But again, white supremacy, they always look out for each other. When black people are being harmed, you always got to cape for the white supremacists. This is why I've been posting all types of findings and stuff on social media early before they start erasing stuff. Whenever you see cases like this, when the white supremacists are acting a fool, get all the information up, all the early information, get it and post it. You got to get the information and post it real fast before they start doing the cover up. Before they start erasing shit and lying, because that's what they're doing for these white supremacist females. They're trying to start erasing shit and lying. So nobody will be held accountable for calling child services and child services not doing anything, for the woman getting arrested, getting a slap on the wrist, and the judicial system not doing anything about it. So when you look back at images of these children with these demonic white supremacist lesbian females, you can see something was going on. They were all skinny, especially Devontae. He was skinny. This pictures of him with the white mother, quote unquote, with her arm around him and his fists are clenched up. He's in a defensive mode. Family, a lot of these children are crying for help. Now, some people will say, well, how come they had to be adopted in the first place? How come the black family didn't take care of them? Well, the black family, they're still under a system of white supremacy, so they're in a system where many times they can't take care of the kids. Also, a lot of times these kids who get put into group homes and get put out there for adoption, a lot of times the family, the black family, are not giving them up. The black family, somebody in this family might have did something and the child was taken away. It's very easy for children to get taken away from black families. So no telling what happened, but it's very easy for black children to get taken from their black families if child protective custody is called. But it's very difficult for them to do anything when it comes to a white supremacist family raising a black child and abusing them. They turn a blind eye. So that's the major difference. Black folks, your kids will get taken away the minute child protective custody people get called. These white supremacists, they be beating these kids and raping them for years, and the CPS comes over and turns a blind eye. They let all types of shit go on with these kids and act like nothing is happening. That's why they adopt these black kids, because they know they can get away with harming them and nothing is going to happen. That goes back to the story about the DeBarge family. DeBarge family, these were his own kids. The DeBarge family, the R&B group, they had a white father, white French dad, and he had a black wife, and they grew up in Detroit, and the white dad was doing all types of demonic shit to these children. Why was he doing it? Because he knew nobody was going to punish him. The police knew. This dude was raping the kids, beating them, molesting all of them. And this was like an open secret in the neighborhood. They knew. The police knew, and nobody never did nothing. They weren't going to punish him, or a white man, for harming black kids. That's just part of the game. That's the good part of white supremacy. You can do anything to black folks, and the system will turn a blind eye. That's how white supremacy works. But black folks, don't think that laying up under white mommy and white daddy is going to be some free ticket where you just gonna live comfortably so you can get away from the black family. A lot of times you jumping out the water right into the frying pan. This is why we have to have systems and institutions in order and in place so that we can protect our children. Because black folks, and let me talk to the black adults, we gotta stop being on some stupid ass deflective intersectionality bullshit when it comes to dealing with these demonic ass white supremacists. Whenever we want to deal with these white supremacists head on, straight up and down, head up, we got too many fucking Negroes out here talking about, well, let's talk about intersectionality though. What about our gay issues? Well, let me tell you something about your gay issues. You fucking coons. This is what the white gay community does to you. Because you try to trump your blackness by claiming to be LGBT and you think you're going to get some kind of pass from the system of white supremacy by putting your sexuality over your race. But then you go into the gay white community and they put whiteness over sexuality all day. Look at these demonic lesbian white females who were white supremacists abusing these children, knowing that the system of white supremacy was going to protect them. They depended on the system of white supremacy, not the system of LGBTQ. It was white supremacy that was protecting these demonic ass women brutalizing these babies like that. And y'all dumbasses up here talking about, well, let's talk about LGBT issues. And y'all got the Milos out here who's team white supremacy and all of these other lesbian female police officers who are beating the shit out of black folks too. Your intersectionality is going to run right back into white supremacy. So when Negroes start talking that bullshit, we're gonna put you on the coon list. We got to have a coon list, so when shit goes down, we'll know who's the turncoats. We'll know who the people are who we cannot depend on. The people who will turn against us. You're going to be on the coon list. Because understand this, a lot of these white supremacists, they have no problem adopting black kids. They don't give a shit. That's like their pet. That's like their personal slave. Hell, the governor of Maine, hardcore white supremacist, Paul LePage, he has a black adopted son. This dude is a hardcore white supremacist. Look up Paul LePage. That's the one who was talking about the problem in Maine, the drug problem. Yes, a lot of white people own heroin and drugs, but the real problem is the Negroes, the blacks coming in from New York, like Lefty, Shifty, and D-Money. Those are the ones coming up here selling it, and they having sex with the white women. Look that fucker up. He has an adopted black child who's grown now. But look at some of these white women and white people who adopt these black kids. Look at Charlize Theron. She has an adopted black boy who she dresses up as a girl. She got the boy walking around in dresses and ballerina shoes and blonde wigs. Look at Angelina Jolie. She has an adopted black girl and even her another little white kid, whatever. Those girls are dressed up like dudes. So whenever we get around these people in the dominant society and they adopt a black child, all of a sudden the black child is on some gender neutrality bullshit. Gender neutral. You don't. It's always this sexual confusion with the damn child. It's always some old crazy experimental bullshit. Look, Sandra Bullock, she adopted a black kid. Her dude, she was married to a damn white supremacist. Madonna, she got some black kids. They wearing dresses and tutus and shit. When we get around them, all of a sudden we get all types of this sexual confusion. And some people were trying to troll earlier. I was pointing this out. Well, they were talking about, well, they're children who choose to do this. Well, how can we choose that when we get around them? How come the children, all of a sudden, the children are being who they are? But the minute you get around some damn suspected white supremacists, all of a sudden the children become gender neutral. All of a sudden they want to be gender neutral. Because that's another thing. Some people will say, well, Charlize Theron's adopted black child, maybe he wanted to dress up in girls' clothes. No, they don't. Children want approval. Children do whatever they're going to do to get approval. They'll do whatever it takes to get approval. That's what children want. They want approval. And if you seem like you are going to approve of them wearing a dress, that's what they will want to do because you are giving them approval. Miss me with that stupid ass bullshit. She wants him to dress in damn girls' clothes, and because he gets approval doing that, he probably says, okay, mom, give me a fucking dress. These are the kind of little demonic mind tricks that they play on our children. They always do this. But I think one of those dudes from that Duck Dynasty show, I think he has there's an adopted black kid in that family. But understand this. When these people have this whole thing where we're adopting the black kids to help them, don't think that's the case all the time. They say the same shit about Haiti and all these other places. You see these places where they go in and try to help black children, and then you find out later that they done raped the whole orphanage. Look at all the rape cases in Haiti with the Red Cross and all of these big organizations. They got whole fucking pedophile rings. They get around our children and they just set it all off because they know even if they get caught, it's going to take years for them to get caught. And even if they do get caught, they ain't going to do nothing to get a slap on the wrist. They know they're just going to get a slap on the wrist. But look at these children when they get around these white supremacist suspects who adopted them. Like this show, I always bring this up, the TV show Black Ink. There's one character on there, her name is Sky. Her son, she had to give him up for adoption because she had him at a very young age. And it was a white family that adopted him. And this boy is crazy. This boy is angry. He is pissed. So no telling what the white folks did to him. No telling what happened with that boy. There are a lot of children out here crying for help, and black adults, we're going to have to get on point to help these children. When people can do whatever to your children, and you sit here and you don't have a punishment mechanism for the people who harm your children, you are going against nature. Black folks, we're the only species in nature that will willingly give our offspring up to predators. Every species in nature has a mechanism to fight for their offspring. We will willingly give our offspring up to the predators, which are the white supremacists. And that's an appetite for destruction. When you are willing to give up your offspring, you're supposed to protect your offspring with your life. Black folks, we will charge our offspring to the game because it's still that plantation mentality. Massa will take care of them, and Massa's not going to take care of them. See, you think just giving the kids up to Massa is going to be like back in the day in slavery. Well, they'll get a nice, comfortable home with Massa. It ain't that type of party no more. This is an extermination campaign. This ain't a slavery campaign. This is an extermination campaign at this point. This is why we have to have a network of institutions in order to pull resources together to help children in our communities. And this is something that black folks have to understand. We got to stop being so damn reckless with having these kids. We got to start being more responsible when it comes to us having children, especially with a lot of rappers. I see a lot of these rappers, niggas be having 8-9 fucking kids. A lot of these athletes be having 8-9 fucking kids by different people. That type of shit is going to have to stop. That type of bullshit is going to have to stop because we're going to have to be more cognizant of how our children are being raised in order for us to survive. We got to start thinking about them, that next generation, because these white supremacists are eating these children up alive at this point, and they don't know what to do. They're crying out for help, and they're not getting no help. This little boy, who the fuck could he turn to? When you look at the picture of him, he's looking at these suspected race soldiers. They ain't gonna help him. These white supremacist females, they ain't gonna help him. He can't go to no black people. Who is he gonna go to? So they're going to neighbors. These children are fucking desperate. Who are they gonna go to? We don't have no goddamn institutions like that. Who are they gonna go to? Our institutions are far in between. Back during the Jim Crow era, when black folks had communities, when we were forced to have our communities, we shouldn't be forced to have our insulated communities, but you knew who to go to. You had a whole community of people who would watch out for you. We don't even have that now. You don't know who to go to as a black child being harmed by a demonic, crazy ass, suspected white supremacist adopted parent. Who are you going to go to? You got to understand this, and I talk about this a lot. During slavery, there was a reason why most of the runaways, if you look at the slave narratives and if you look at the runaway slave ads that were in newspapers, there was a reason why the majority of runaway slaves were the house slaves. Even George Washington, his house slaves, got the fuck out of there. The majority of all the runaway slaves were the ones who worked in the house because they had to live right there under these demonic fuckers. And they knew firsthand, they saw up close how demonic and degenerate these people were. And they said, I will risk death before staying up under a roof with these people. While the Negroes in the field are like, ooh, I can't wait to get in the house. The people in the house was like, I can't wait to get the fuck out of here. We can't wait to get out of here. That's why they risked their lives. George Washington, his house slave, this was the president. His house slaves risked their lives getting the fuck away from him and his wife. These white supremacists are more demonic than you can understand. This is why with all this protesting, let me talk to my black folks about this protesting. Black people, and look, I know my brother got killed up there in Sacramento. We need to stop protesting altogether. Who are you protesting to? I know we want to do something. When something happens, when one of us get killed, we want to do something. We think just going outside, walking around in a circle, at least I'm doing something. You're going to have to be more constructive. You're going to have to be more strategic. Who are you protesting to? There's nobody to protest to. Protesting is a complete waste of time. These people know that you're being harmed. Who are you? What you're trying to do is find somebody in the dominant white society who has enough humanity to help you. Unfortunately, the white people who do have humanity, who would like to help, can't because the white supremacists are more powerful than them. Those white people who can help you or who want to help you, I can't say the word can, but who would like to help you, they can't because they're not in any position to help you. Do you understand this, black people? I want y'all to really get this in your head. The white people who want to help you, because there's some white people who are human, they got humanity. Unfortunately, these white people are not in any position to do anything for you. They're not in charge of the judicial system. They're not in charge of the police system. They're not in charge of the court system. They're not in charge of the business systems. They're just not. So who are you protesting to? You're just begging the white supremacists for mercy, and you can't beg them for mercy because their whole reason for being is to show you pain, suffering, and malnutrition and everything else. There's nobody to protest to, family. The Roseanne show, Roseanne Barr, she did a reboot of her show where she's playing a Trump supporter, which I think she's a Trump supporter in real life, and it got, the reboot got record ratings. That just shows that these advertisers now, these companies, they are now pandering to the white supremacist crowd because they realize, hey, wait a minute. There's enough white supremacists out here to monetize and make money off of them. So let's just pander to them just like we did in the Jim Crow era. Understand, in the Jim Crow era, that's where the Aunt Jemima pancakes and all that shit started popping off, showing stereotypical images of black people on products to sell them. Aunt Jemima, Uncle Ben, all of these coon caricatures, they use those to sell products. So the thing is, white supremacy, they're mainstreaming it again. So who are you protesting to? The protest, that's done. You're in a war right now. You don't protest in a war. That's like in Nazi Germany. The Nazis are out here putting people in ovens and killing them, and the victims of that are just walking around with a sign like, hey, my life matters. Oh, who are you protesting to? You have a whole country of Nazis and Nazi sympathizers. So who are you protesting to? That's where we are right now. We have a bunch of white supremacists and white supremacist sympathizers who have infiltrated all levels of power. And who are we protesting to? They're attacking children and they're protecting the people who are attacking black children. Black children. black and non-white. And again, I'm on the whole, I'm still hold your own nuts, but even just non-whites. See, they're getting that nigga wake-up call, too. You know, and I talk a lot about Jeffrey Dahmer. Back when Jeffrey Dahmer, the white supremacist serial killer, Jeffrey Dahmer, before he was found out to have murdered all those people, he molested a 13-year-old Laotian boy. No, he was 14. How old was he? He was 13, I think. I think the boy was 13. He molested this Laotian boy. And Laos is like, that's like in Southern Asia. They're dark people. They're like damn near black Asians. They're very dark. But Jeffrey Dahmer molested this kid, and he was going to kill him. But Jeffrey Dahmer went to a bar and left the boy at the house by himself. And the boy was drugged, but the boy got out. He came to and escaped and went to the authorities. And Jeffrey Dahmer was actually charged with molesting this child. Jeffrey Dahmer was in jail for a week for molesting this child, got out on bail, and his sentencing was delayed for like 4 months. So he was given a pass. So he molested this kid, and Jeffrey was back on the streets in a week. Now, sometime later, the boy that he molested, he had a brother. And I can't, they have very long names. I can't pronounce the boy's names. But the boy he molested had a younger brother. So I think about a year or so went past, and they didn't recognize who Jeffrey Dahmer was. So Jeffrey lured the brother of the kid he molested. He lured him to his house. Jeffrey lured the other boy to the house. Jeffrey did the same thing. He drugged the boy, raped him, and he was about to kill him. The boy managed to escape because Jeffrey left, and the boy managed to escape. The boy was in the streets naked, butt naked, with his rectum bleeding. Two 17-year-old black girls saw this boy and they went to help him. It was two 17-year-old sisters. They got the boy. They knew he was in trouble. They went to the police. They flagged the cop down and said, hey, this boy right here is in trouble. Now, the boy, because he was drugged, he couldn't talk. Because he was so drugged, he couldn't explain what was happening. But the girls knew, hey, this boy is in trouble. You need to help him. Around the same time, Jeffrey Dahmer was looking for the boy. He saw the girls with the boy talking to the cops. So Jeffrey Dahmer went to the police officers and told the police, hey, you know, that boy, that he's not really a boy. That's my lover. That's my gay lover. He's really 19 years old. And that's my lover, and he's drunk. So, you know, we had a lover spat. The officer is a guy, a white supremacist named John Balserzak. That was the officer. And Jeffrey Dahmer was talking to this officer saying, hey, man, that's my lover. Just give him back to me. The girls were still there. The black girls are telling this officer, hey, we don't trust this. This boy is in trouble, officer. You need to help this boy. I don't believe this guy. The boy is in trouble. The officers didn't believe the girls. They told the girls, hey, why don't y'all just butt out of it? Get on out of here. Just y'all going home somewhere. So the officers dismiss the black girls. Not only did the officers dismiss the black girls, the officers help take the boy back to Jeffrey Dahmer's house. They literally helped carry this boy inside Jeffrey Dahmer's house. They helped Jeffrey take the boy back to the house. When they got to Jeffrey Dahmer's house, they could smell the rotten flesh of other people Jeffrey killed. And Jeffrey just said, hey, you know, They were like, what's that smell, buddy? And, oh, you know, my refrigerator, man, I got some food spoiling. Oh, okay, that makes sense. They even saw pictures laying around of Jeffrey Dahmer with other young boys that he molested. They ignored the pictures. They were like, okay, you two lovers have at it. You know, sorry to inconvenience you, sir. Y'all have a good day. The police didn't even bother to run Jeffrey Dahmer's ID. If they ran Jeffrey Dahmer's ID, they would have saw that he was a convicted pedophile. That would have came up. They didn't even bother. This is how the white privilege works. They kept giving Jeffrey Dahmer a pass. So Jeffrey took that boy back in the house with the help of the police. The white police helped him bring this boy, this dark-skinned, non-white child, in the house after he escaped. Once he got back in there, Jeffrey Dahmer drugged him some more, raped him some more, dismembered his body after he killed him and strangled him, chopped his body up and ate him. And Jeffrey Dahmer knew his white privilege would help him get away with this type of shit. Now here's the kicker. He killed the boy, killed him, dismembered him. The white supremacist race soldier who delivered him to Jeffrey Dahmer, John Balsarzak, he got fired temporarily, but remember, white supremacists never get fired. They only get transferred. He got fired. He protested it, got reinstated to the force. Not only did he get reinstated to the force, he became a president of one of the police unions there in Milwaukee. Not only that, John Balsarzak retired last year, full pension and everything. Nothing happened to that man. This man delivered a non-white child to a serial killer, even after people in the community told him that that child was in danger and he got promoted. This motherfucker got promoted. Understand, all the people who beat Rodney King's ass, remember, they got promoted too, by the way. White, they don't get fired. White supremacists don't get fired. They get promoted. That's why that brother went on that killing spree, that former police officer. What's his name? That brother out here in California. They had to shut the city down because this brother started bussing on everybody. Because he saw the racism going on within the department, so he said, hey, there's only one way to handle this. But this is how the white supremacists, it ain't just about demonic ass degenerate white supremacists. There's a system. Chris Dorner, that's his name. Chris Dorner. It's not about just degenerate demonic white supremacists who are abusive. It's about a system that protects these people. They are protected. These folks are protected. Just like the white supremacists who killed that brother in Cleveland. He just got that back pay. They gave him a big old back pay. They get rewarded for their degenerate behavior. The guy who killed Philando Castile, he got big old back pay severance package. You understand? This is why, family, we gotta have systems in place so that we can look out for people. This is why, look, if you are a child out there, you are a black child, and you are in a situation where you're around some demonic ass white supremacist adopted parents, and you don't know what to do, I'm gonna give you an email address. Because we got to stop talking about it and being about it. If you are a black child around some suspected white supremacists who are abusing you, because a lot of times you can't go to the police because they're not going to help you. If you are a black child, no matter what age, I want you to email. I have a special email for you. You reach out to me. I will do everything I can to make sure you are all right. you email me at TarikTime818@gmail.com. TarikTime818@gmail.com. If anything is happening to you, this kid up here, when I look at his picture of Devontae Hart just begging for help, you can see in his eyes, he's begging for goddamn help, begging these cops for help. He can't articulate it. He can't say it. He don't know what to do. This kid was begging for fucking help, and nobody would help him. I'm going to say it again. If you are a child, anywhere, anywhere, I don't care where you are, and you are up under some demonic-ass white supremacists, and you are afraid to go to the authorities because they're a bunch of white supremacists too, email me. I'm going to give it to you again. TarikTime818@gmail.com. I will guarantee I will get some help to you. You starving or whatever, they ain't feeding you. I will make sure you get the help you need. No matter where you are, we will not let you suffer. All of the old folks out here ain't coons. I will make sure you get whatever you need. I will personally make sure out of my own fucking pocket. You shouldn't have to sneak to neighbors' homes looking for food. I will make sure you personally get what you need. With that being said, you old ass fucking niggas, don't email me pretending to be no fucking kid. Don't play games. Don't find a damn baby picture of somebody and be like, hey, look, man, I'm 8 years old and I'm hungry. Send me $200. Don't do no stupid shit like that. That's another problem. Because when we trying to help people in the community, it's always motherfuckers who want to come in and finesse. Let's cut that stupid shit out. Just like that nigga over at Howard University, people trying to get student. Did y'all hear about this shit? This dude, kids trying to get student loans at Howard University. Some little old moist ass sassy nigga at Howard University finessing the damn student loan money. This nigga is getting the student loan money, putting it in his account, and he's out here flossing and taking pictures and designer clothes and Gucci bags and shit. And telling people, hey, ooh, man, you know, we ain't got no money for you here. But he's getting the money sent to him. See, we got this whole thing where we want to finesse other black folks who need the resources. Let's cut that shit out. So he can flex on the gram and all that old sucker shit. No, cut that shit out. This dude, yeah, this nigga finessed like $500,000 almost. Trying to get the bag and taking the money. No, stop that sucker shit. Cut all that shit out. Yeah, Tyrone. This old moist nigga with some old burlap Prada pants and Gucci slippers and shit. With his ass tooted up on yachts. Come on, man. We got to cut that out. And people out here struggling to get their little student loan money. We got to cut all that out. We got to stop all that. Yeah, if you're going to finesse some other races of people. Shit. Finesse them. Don't finesse other black folks. Damn, don't finesse nobody for that case, but damn, definitely not no other damn black people. So you can floss on the damn gram. But this is, again, this is one of the reasons why I want to go around the country and network with black businesses so that we'll just get on the same page. It's important for us to have a network of black businesses so we know who's who, so we can vibe. Like when I was down in Miami, I'm networking with different black businesses. Shout out to my brother Johnny over at Crabman 305, chopping it up with these brothers, seeing how they're doing it. I love that type of thing, networking with other black business owners. We don't understand how important that is. Because when you network with other black business owners, you guys can aggregate your resources and help people within certain communities, and you can have almost an underground railroad. That's how Hollywood got started. You had a bunch of people who were Jewish immigrants who were marginalized by the dominant society, so they connected with each other who were business owners, and they created a whole industry, and they looked out for each other. See, we're supposed to have a system like that. We're supposed to have a system like that. So like I said, this is why, again, we got the travel show that we're going to do. We're going to showcase black businesses. We're going to showcase black businesses, family. So y'all click that link. Click that link. And support the ISM Radio Travel Reality Show so we can network with different businesses out here. The link is below here. We only have a few hours to do it because the campaign ends later on today. But go to Indiegogo. Go to Indiegogo and click or go to or type in ISM Radio Travel Reality Show and become a part of that, what we're doing. And again, I'm going to give the email out again. If you are a child, if you're in a situation where some white supremacist adopted parents are abusing you, you need to email me, TariqTime818@gmail.com. So we can make sure you will be all right. Because I know the law enforcement, most likely they are not going to help you. They're going to side with your captors. And that's how I look at them. And I say black kids who are in situations where you have suspected white supremacist overseers, because if you got black parents, you can just call the police on them. They'll come right away. But black children in these white supremacist households, a lot of times you're just stuck. So we got to have our own alternative network where we look out for each other. That's just how we got to do it. We got to go old school with it. Anyway, y'all, let me get up out of here. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm going to do another show, a live YouTube broadcast, probably later on tonight, because there's some other stuff I want to talk about. I want to talk about some more stuff that went down in Miami. I just had to talk about this because this was heavy on my heart just all last night and all day. I really wanted to talk about this because this killed me inside, seeing our black children getting harmed by these demonic alt-lice creatures. That really burned me. But anyway, man, I'm out of here, man. Again, go to the Indiegogo page. Click the link below Indiegogo. Get involved with the ISM Radio Travel Show. Everybody who's in the, it's like 2,000 people here now. Everybody put $2 on it. Shit, that's all you got to do. Put $2 on it. It'll take you, 3 minutes to do that. And you guys be good. Also, go to HiddenColorsFilm.com. Go to 1804Movie.com to get those DVDs. Learn who you are. Learn that game. All right.